I'm going to miss this tree. Anyway, here's Russell.
Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm shocked and pleasantly surprised that you guys are here. You know, this is, you know, I've been in South Florida for, I don't know, 50-something years, and this is probably, this is right up there with one of the heaviest torrential rainfalls I've ever seen consistently over a long period of time. And I figured there'd be like two people here, and they'd be soaking wet. And the fact that you guys are all here is pretty much a testament to either how crazy or desperate you are, or how committed you are, how much willingness you have. So I'm glad you guys chose to show up. And I'm really excited about talking to you all tonight. And, you know, I have something on my heart that I want to share with you that I'm not sure I've actually shared this before. It's just sort of like a little bit different. And we're on the 12th step. And I'm not even going to talk about, heck, you could spend years and weeks and whatever it is talking about all aspects of the 12 step. This isn't meant to be comprehensive. It's not meant to cover the entire 12 step or giving you a survey of it, or I'm just going to focus on one particular thing on the 12 step. And I would rather try to give you a thorough explanation or some thorough insight into one aspect of something to do with the 12 step in my life, an experience I have, then just try to give you some sort of general thing, or read the book, or I'm going to read the book, or just sort of go over it lightly, and for whatever good it's going to do you. And for some of you, it may help you out. For some of you, it may not help you out. For some of you, it may not help you out now. It may help you out, you know, 6 years from now. I don't know, but I know this. I know it's my truth. It's the truth for me. And let me start off by saying that this is my experience. What I'm going to talk to you about is based upon my experience. You know, I haven't had it. Found necessary to have a drink since January 17th, 1981. So I've been sober for a little over 30 years. And of course, it's not a record in here. My sponsor's sober for 50-something, 55, I'm not even sure, years. But, you know, after you've been doing this thing for over 30 years, you notice, you know, when you first come in here, this is all a theory. This is all new. You don't even understand what they're talking about. You don't even understand the words, turning it over. And then you start trying it, and most of the time, the stuff they're telling you to do goes completely counter to what you would normally do. Otherwise, you'd be doing it. And so you don't believe it works, and maybe you don't do it, and then you start doing it, and then it works, and you do it again and again, and over a period of 10 or 15 years, you start falling into these patterns where you actually start doing this stuff, and it's working in your life, but somewhere along the line, you fall into a pattern where you start actually acting, doing, and thinking, and behaving like those crazy old-time sponsors were telling you to do, and things start working for you. So, in a sense, you no longer have to read from the book or talk about what you learned in the book. You can just talk about your life as an expert, because it's working for you. So you don't need a script. You don't need to sort of study up on it. This is what's working. So I want to share with you an aspect of the 12 step that's sort of working for me, and how I do it and what I do. Now, this is a caveat. This is my experience. I'm not lying to you. You know, there's no percentage of me coming up here and giving you a bunch of crap and telling you something that isn't happening in my life. I'm not saying this to brag. This is just a report, okay? Now, this may not be for everybody. Of course, you have to understand, since it's my experience, it works for me. I think everybody ought to do it, okay? And I'll figure a way of telling, and since I am so used to alcoholics making excuses, you have to understand, I've sponsored quite a lot of men. And I've listened to quite a lot of stories and quite a lot of problems and quite a lot of people coming up to me who are inextricably trapped in a horrible, sober existence with all sorts of problems. And so I've had occasion to suggest solutions to people, real solutions to their problems. And I've had many, many occasions to hear these people who I hand these solutions to say something like, well, I can't do that. And I say, why? And they say something, because Thursday nights I watch the canary. You know, they give me some crazy excuse. So you have to understand, I am already preset not to believe a word out of your mouth. You know, because I'm like you. I'm an excuser. I want to figure out, I want to give you an excuse as to why I can't do that, so I really have to remain sick, because that won't work for me. So you understand that I'm going to suggest some things to you that are going to sound, I think, for some people, really radical. Now, I don't think it's radical at all, and it's not radical in my life, and it's working in my life today. And I quite honestly don't believe it can't work in every single alcoholic's life. I just think, here's the problem. I just think in order to have this work in your life, you're going to have to actually do something. See, that's the problem. The problem is, in order to do what I do, or have it work the way I see it, it sort of works, you're going to actually have to do something. In other words, it's not going to be the kind of thing where you could sit in the back of a meeting and it's going to like fall on your head and it's going to happen to you. You're going to have to go out and do something. And since most people don't want to do something, or if they're already doing something, they don't want to do more. I mean, the last thing an alcoholic wants to hear is, you got to do more. You know, after you're going to your one or two or three meetings a week or five meetings a week and you're sucking your thumb and you want to kill yourself and you go to your sponsor and you say, it's not working for me, the last thing you want him to say is, well, how many meetings are you going to? He says, well, I'm going to four meetings a week. The last thing you want to hear him say is this, well, you need to go to more meetings. Now listen to me. Here's the question. What if that's the answer? What if you go to seven meetings a week and all of a sudden you're doing great? You're doing great. You're going to four, you're doing lousy. You're going to seven, you're doing great. Now you sponsor something. They come up to you. They're sucking their thumb. Then you say, how many meetings are you going to? They say four meetings. They say, you need to go to seven. He says, you're crazy. Are you going to back off from that? You're going to say, maybe I'm wrong? You know, the answer may just be seven meetings. You know, the answer may be doing something you think is crazy. What do you think about that? You know, and that's that. And so I'm going to tell you some really crazy stuff. Some stuff that most people, I think, in Alcoholics Anonymous don't do or don't even think of doing. And I personally think it's biblical. Now, I personally think it's biblical. That means I personally think it's backed up by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's backed up by this book. But, you know, it's like so many things that are backed up by this book. We hear things in this book that are extraordinarily radical. And then we sort of blink our eyes and they say, well, they can't mean that. We say they can't, so we ignore it. You know, we pull that whole blanket over our head as you understand it. You see, what we do is we take the words God as you understand him, and what we do is, since we're allowed to do God as you understand him, what we do is just sort of stretch that a little and say, well, then it must be everything in the English language in this book as we understand them. So if it says here, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics. And we realize that the first 100 people, especially Bill Wilson, devoted his entire life. They don't even know what he did for a job after he came to AA. His whole life was writing and going, dealing with alcoholics. And you start reading that these guys, Dr. Bob, devoted his whole life like a mission, like ministry, like a mission, like these guys that go into a jungle, you know, in the Nile with the Indians, to alcoholism. They say nothing will ensure sobriety. It's intensive work with alcoholics. We look at that because we're involved in what? We talked about this before, you know, our little idols and our schemes and designs. We're involved in juggling. You remember I did that juggling where we got the world and we got the wife and we got the kids and we got the car and we got the prestige and we got the money and we got all that other stuff. And then we got this AA thing and we're trying to figure out, well, how do you sort of fit that in? Because then you got to fit that in with all the important stuff. And AA is great, but what do you do when you're talking about something important? And so we see this thing because what's important to you is, you know what's important to you? I'll tell you what's the most important thing to you, what you think about mostly. Do you think about God mostly? Well, if you think about God mostly, that's probably very important to you. Do you think about your relationship with God? You think about, you know, helping people mostly? I guess that's important. Do you think about money mostly? Well, I guess that's the most important thing to you. Do you think about romance and sex mostly? Well, I guess that's the most important thing to you. So you just started to figure out how much time you spend thinking about stuff. And so if you don't spend a lot of time thinking about this, except maybe in AA meetings, or, you know, when you have nothing else to do, and if you don't spend a lot of time reading about this, or you don't spend a lot of time fellowshipping with people that do this, or a lot of time with this AA thing, and you read something like practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics, then you sort of see that, and you understand the English language, but you take that word intensive, and you sort of like beat it with a stick a little bit, and it comes out to once in a while. It still sounds like intensive, but what it really means to you is once in a while. Because, Russ, this is my own personal program, you know? It says, I understand intensive, you know what I mean? And you change this program, you change every word in this program to something different than it means. All of a sudden, this program becomes so elastic that it means nothing. All of a sudden, words like I did a whole thing on the thing, I think I titled it called Utterly. All of a sudden, you read this thing, you know, right here it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him, completely to God. And all of a sudden, we beat utterly with a stick, and it becomes like, well, you know, we think about him once in a while. You know what I mean? It becomes, we sort of like dilute everything. And you know what does it say about half measures? Avails us nothing. It avails, you know what half measures avail you? Nothing. Zero. What that means by zero, that means, I'll tell you what it means. It means you're drinking. Maybe 10 years down the road, maybe 15 years down the road, it means you're drinking. It doesn't mean you have like sort of crappy, it means you're drinking. Or it means you just have crummy, miserable, sort of like emotional sobriety. It doesn't get you to Hawaii. It doesn't get you to where you're going to go. You know, unless you start putting power behind these words and figuring out and start getting honest. How can you work a program of honesty if you can't be honest about the meaning of words? If you dishonestly change the meaning of words to something they're not, you know, how can you work an honest program of recovery? And so I'm going to just suggest to you some things I do which are going to seem radical, except for people that don't water down the words. Then it won't seem radical. Because I can guarantee you, if you hung around with Bill Wilson when he first started this program and you did what he said to do, you would think that he was crazy. If you hung around with Bob Smith and did what he said you should do with the morning meditation and the following, and you would think he was crazy. If you hung around with some of the men I hung around with and you actually did what they told you to do, you would think they were crazy. Because they were just devoting way too much time to this stuff. They were putting it way ahead of everything else. So what I want to talk to you tonight about is something I'm going to term it creating spiritual fellowship. You know, in the last part of the book, it says, you'll surely join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. Fellowship of the Spirit is capitalized. The first time it really comes out, if you want to find it, it's in one of the books, the letters from the Apostle Paul. I think it's in Corinthians, but I may be wrong, where he talks about fellowship of the Spirit. Not fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, but something called, it's different, it's something called fellowship of the Spirit. It's called spiritual fellowship. Isn't that what we're talking about here? It's, you know what it says? What is the 12-step seven? He says, having had a spiritual awakening, being involved with other individuals in a fellowship of the Spirit, and creating a fellowship of the Spirit. And it's sort of funny the way God works for me today. I wanted to talk to you about how this is working in my life. And I also want to tell you that this is not the type of thing. You know, I've been sober a little over 30 years, like I said. So this, I don't want you to think this is the kind of thing where I came out of the womb. I came in day A, fully understanding and doing any of this stuff. I came in fully not understanding any of this stuff and not wanting to do any of this stuff. And I'm going to tell you something. Everything above picking up a white chip and going to one meeting a week would have been extra credit for me. You know, I was never in this for extra credit. I was here for the bare bones, get sober, and then get the girl, and get the money, I was not here for extra credit. So I understand everything I'm saying now is going to seem like extra credit. It's going to seem like over and above. But what you really have to understand is it's not extra credit. This is the ante in the poker game just to get to the first level. That you're not even at the first level unless you're involved in this stuff, in my opinion. Right? Now, you don't have to agree with me. You could say, hey, that guy Russell is crazy. And here's what's going to happen. You know, if you don't die, you're going to be alive for a while, 10, 20, 30 years. And somewhere in the future, you're going to be somewhere. You're going to be somewhere. You're going to be on your fifth husband or 14th wife or, you know, sucking on alcohol or something like that. And you're going to maybe look back on this talk, if you can even remember, and you're going to say, you know, maybe that son of a bitch was right. You know what I mean? Or you're going to be doing this stuff, and you're going to be talking about it, and you're going to say, and they're going to say, man, that's great what you did. And he says, no, you don't understand. I didn't even think of it. Some guy said this about 20 years. I didn't make this stuff up. you're going to realize that this is what the deal is. And I don't know who's going to realize and who's not going to realize it. But I'm just going to tell you, here's what I'm doing. I'm going to tell you what the deal is. And the funny thing is about God and the way it works is I had a guy, this always seems to happen to me. Whenever I decide I'm going to sort of talk about something or the fellowship, what happens is I get a call from a guy, either sponsor I work with, asking me a question. And it's about the exact thing that I'm talking about. And so I can sort of, from a practical basis, tell you a true story. You know, we're all into realism, you know, reality TV. I can tell you a realistic story about something that happened to me in a sponsorship situation of precisely this deal and what's happening to somebody else. So you know, fellowship is kind of important. When you know, in the Bible, you know, we know all this stuff came from the Bible. I'm not going to go through all that thing about the book of James and Sermon on the Mount and all that sort of stuff. And one of the things that you see in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, and to a certain extent in the Old Testament, is the concept of the discipleship. Discipleship, making disciples. In other words, not only carrying the message of the gospel, of the good news, you know, that there's recovery, but actually making disciples of people, turning people into disciples so that they can go out and also carry the message to other people. A fellowship of disciples. In other words, mentors, a mentorship program. Hey, when you go home tonight, why don't you type into your computer, whatever it is, Alcoholics Anonymous or AA or 12-step recovery and discipleship or mentorship, and see some of the stuff you come up with. When they, you know, this is stuff that's not really talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is stuff that you don't really hear talked about. You know, they talk about following the principles and everything. Why don't you type that in about mentorship? And one of the reasons why it's not is because it's not done that much. It's done by a few people, but most people don't get involved in it. Because you know why? It's too much trouble. And as we know, we're corroded with fear. And what do we fear? It says fear of people. Remember, it says fear of people and of economic insecurity. So we're not only scared about money, we're scared of people. We're scared of what they're going to think about us. And they, you know, I tell you all these stories about when I first came in, my sponsor said, go check that group out and see whether you join the group. I sat in the back of the room. You know, I was waiting for people to come up to me. I didn't go up to them. You know, I say, why don't you do the meeting? I'm not ready. You know, until we understand that once we take, you know, I understand. Once you drink, I understand if you're drinking, you're out there, you'll screw a tree. I understand that. You know, I understand if you're drinking, you'll make love to a tree. You'll get nude in front of 15 people. You'll be the president of the group. You'll make a fool out of yourself. You won't even mind. I understand that. You won't care what other people, I understand if you're drunk, you don't give a crap about what other people think about you. You're free as a bird. But if you're a sober alcoholic, you'll never do any of that stuff, and all you do is sit around, suck your thumb, and worry about what other people think about you. And you'll wait for the next guy to make the move. You know what I mean? You ain't doing nothing unless somebody does it first, okay? Because alcoholics are pretty basically scared of other people and their judgment. So if you tell an alcoholic, you've got, in order to live, you've got to go out and create a fellowship, which means go out and meet people and greet people and sponsor people or bring people around, you know. They're going to figure out any. They're going to try to figure out every possible reason why they can't do it because they're too busy. I mean, the first step when you, why do people tell you to join a home group? The first step, the first reason they tell you to join a home group is to join a group. And you know how hard most people find doing that? Why do people say get a sponsor? You know how many people I've spoken to with years in the program that are in trouble? And they're trying to figure out the answer. And they've been in trouble for years. And they're confused. And the first thing I ask them, I say, who's your sponsor? And they either say they don't have one. Or they say they have one, but they haven't spoken to them in 6 months. And they give me an excuse why. And the bottom line is, it's their response. It's their sobriety. They're the one. But you want to know something? There's this fear of linking up with another person. There's this fear of helping another person. There's this fear of being helped by another person. There's a fear of joining the group, and it's as real can be. We just don't naturally go up to people and say, let me try to help you. We just don't naturally go up to people and say, I've got a problem, will you help me? We just don't do that. We really want to stay in our own little cocoons and sit at home somewhere in a program where the whole thing, at the very end, when you get to the end, it's based upon your desire to get involved with a fellowship, a spiritual fellowship, and disciple people. They even say in the book things like, after you get to a certain point, they say, we encourage church membership. We encourage that you get out of the AA coffin. Join a church. Join a Bible study. Do this. We encourage it. I can read you the parts in this. Why do you think they say that? And all of a sudden you find that people that are free and doing this stuff and enjoy and having joy in their life and the joy of living and all that stuff are doing all this stuff. And you're sitting around sucking your thumb saying, why isn't this working for me? And I say, do you belong to a church? Do you belong to a synagogue? Do you go into a Bible study? How many people you sponsor? And I ask all these questions. The answer is no, 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 no. And for every question you say no, 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 you have a good excuse. Well, good. Good. Just be miserable and be happy with your excuses. And at the very end, you can say, well, I lived a miserable life and I never got what anybody else had, but it's not my fault. Because Thursday is the days I wash the parakeet. And the parakeet needs to be washed, you know, and that's just the way it is. You know, I got to wash the parakeet on Thursdays, you know. And whatever you do, don't get a sponsor like me. I had one of the guys I sponsored today wrote me back an email. I wish I didn't erase it. I don't know why I erased this thing. I should have read it. He asked me a question. I gave him an answer. He didn't like the answer. And he says, you know, you're an egotistical, maniacal, selfish, sensitive son of a bitch. And I wrote him back and I said, you know, you're probably right. Or I just don't suffer fools. I just don't suffer fools. And he wrote back and he says, that's what I like about you old timers. You really don't get resentments, you just give them. And I started thinking about Ray O'Keefe. And I started thinking about Joe Snyder. And I started thinking some of the old timers I looked up to. And I loved these guys. And I loved them at the time and they helped me. And I started thinking about how they treated me. And they were horrible in a wonderful kind of way. Because they would always give me the answer. And it was always straightforward, in your face, no bullshit. And if you were ever stupid enough to make an excuse, they always bitch slapped you. And then they walked away. They didn't want to spend any time with you. I mean, they never got involved in the drama. They were never addicted to the chaos or the drama. It was always like, look, here's the deal. Do it or don't bother me. Go out and drink. I don't have time for you. They just didn't spend a whole lot of time suffering fools. And I think really an earmark of sobriety is how much time you spend listening to horseshit. I mean, really. I mean, there are people who spend hours crying over people that are never going to do anything. You know, I remember the guy who, because, you know, if anybody can gather up a fellowship of thumbsuckers around them, it's an alcoholic. You know, and we're all here. You know, it's like the guy was saying, it's like the guy in, you know, I think I told you about him. We're at the Sunset Room with my sponsor, and he starts with the stuff. He says, I'm here, you know, for 3 months, and, you know, I can't make any friends, and nobody cares about me, and I'm all alone, and blah, blah, blah. And he goes on for 10 minutes, and everybody's heart is breaking, and, you know, it was an 11 o'clock meeting from 11 to 12, and at 12 o'clock we're going to go to lunch, and the meeting ends. And I run right up to the guy and say, look, my sponsor and I, we're going to lunch right across the street. We have a lunch group. We have a group of people. Why don't you join us? He says, no, I'm going home to watch the game. I looked at my sponsor and he says, you know, Russ, some people want help and some people just want attention. You got to recognize when people are full of shit. You got to recognize when people, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, full of shit, anonymous. You know, this ain't Well People's Anonymous. Don't believe just because somebody says this time I'm really going to do it, don't you ever believe that. Just because people say I'm serious this time, don't you ever believe that. It's what they do, it's not what they say. Believe me, when all is said and done is here, there'll be a lot more said than done. And that's the deal. And so this is real simple with me. You just state your truth and then you move on. It's not that you just don't want to help people. It's just because every second you waste with somebody that never wants to do this and just wants to make believe there's some son of a gun over there that really is needing help and wants to do this thing. And he wants to hear from you. And you just don't have time to waste on that deal. Practically, so one day I woke up and I was feeling kind of squirrely, and I was like 6 months sober, or 5 months sober, or 3 weeks sober, whatever I was short sobriety. And I have no idea how this happened. I couldn't get a hold of my sponsor, I couldn't get a hold of everybody, and I had been going around with my sponsor, and my sponsor, it was kind of like a weird thing. when he picked you up for the night to go to a meeting, and we went all the time to meetings. Like, this guy didn't have a life. Like, every day, what meeting are you going to? Every day, you know what I mean? Meetings, 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 all of the meetings. Meetings, it was like, this guy, I can't even explain it, he liked meetings. He was like, this guy didn't even have a life, you know what I mean? I mean, he had a job, he supported people, he had a wife, but he had no life. His whole life was picking up alcoholics, picking them up from detox, going to meetings, here, there. Hey, it was like, what's with this? He was like a meeting wacko. And you know something? Here's the crazy thing. He like found other people just like him. And he would hang out with them and talk to them. They all knew each other. And there was Murray's meetings, makers make it. You know what I mean? I mean, there were these guys and they had like nicknames, you know? And everybody knew them because they were always around. You know, meetings makers make it, you know, and you know, that kind of stuff. And they would say all sorts of weird things. They all talked the same. They all had the same lines and everything like that. Everybody knew everybody's lines. And he picked me up, and it was the kind of thing, like if he was going to go to a meeting, he'd pick me up at 6 o'clock. We'd go out to dinner, you know, till 7 or 8 o'clock. Then we'd go to a meeting till around 9:30, you know, 10 o'clock. And then we'd go out and we'd have ice cream or coffee or something like that and smoke cigarettes until 12 or 1 o'clock. And then, it was like the whole night. It was like from 6 o'clock to 1 o'clock in the morning. And then there'd be the next day. And there'd be 5 or 6 guys with us. And they were all like my brothers, you know, like my, I was like in a, like a litter. They were all like brothers, and one would fall off and everything like that. I mean, I didn't, you know, as I'm telling you about this, you understand, as I'm telling you about, see, I don't have to, when you say, how do you do this? I don't have to go to my car and check my notes. Yeah. What happened? I remember this stuff. You know what I mean? I'm just telling you what I remember. Now, at the time, I thought nothing of it because it was what I was involved. When you're involved in that, when that's what you do, that's what you do. So I just went here and I went there and I went. But now that I look back at what I do in my life, I see that this son of a bitch, what he did was he brainwashed me. All he did was create without me even notice. He created like a clone, you know, like some sort of guy. I'm like, and what's even worse is I'm worse than he is. It's like the disease is getting worse. It's like I've gotten sicker. I like it more, bigger. You know what I mean? Better. It's like craziness. You know what I mean? And this is how I was brought up in AA. This is how I was brought up in AA. So you have to understand when I see someone, when somehow someone comes to my radar screen. Into my, and all the guys in that group, and all the guys that were around that knew everybody and traveled and went, and they'd say, Joe's doing the meeting, we went this, that, and that, this went here and went there. And they were all excited and happy, and they were sober, and they were joyous. And you got to say, when you were involved in that deal, and somebody would come across my radar screen now, and they would come up to me, maybe because they have a problem, whatever, they'd start talking to me, it would be in short order where I'd recognize that they're not involved. Now, it doesn't take a lot to recognize that they're like out there orbiting Venus, and they're not really in the fellowship of the Spirit. They're in AA. What do you do? Well, I'm in AA. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, and they may belong to a group. You belong to a home? Yeah, I belong to a home. Yeah, well, I don't really, you know. So who do you hang with? Well, I don't really hang with people. So it doesn't take long to realize that you're dealing with somebody who's like an asteroid in the asteroid belt. Like they're technically in AA, because technically to be in AA, all you need is a desire to stop drinking, right? So you come in here, and you could hang out in your closet for the entire week, and if you have a desire to stop drinking, and you go to one AA meeting, I guess you're technically in AA. But they're not in what I'm dealing, they're not involved in anything I'm doing. So if somebody, you have to understand, if somebody comes across my orbit, in my gravitational pull, what I'm going to try to do, because it worked for me and worked for everybody I know, I'm going to try to get them involved in my planetary system. Now, whether you want to call that egotistical or something, whatever it is, I'm going to try to do to them what my smarts did for me and disciple them and mentor them and say, this is how we do it, in groups, around, together, with everybody, and that kind of deal. There's strength in that. That's the way we do it. And if you're going to fight me on that and you're going to do it, I'm not going to chase it. I'm not going to run after you. It's just not going to happen that way. You know, you're either going to get it or you're going to figure it out or you're not going to get it. And it says here in the book, you know, you start talking about, does it give any explanation as to how we're supposed to do these things? It says here, it says, a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. Get that? A kindly act once in a while? A kindly act once in a while? I mean, really, Stopping at the light and giving the homeless guy $1 just ain't enough. You know, helping a guy at an AA meeting once in a while just ain't enough. This is what they say. This is the standard they set. You ready for the standard? You have to act the Good Samaritan every day. Okay, so first of all, we start out, you know, every day not only do you have to go to meetings, you got to be the Good Samaritan. Now, I know some of you guys have read the Bible, some of you guys haven't. There's a reason why they talk about the Good Arab. They say it because it's a parable said by Jesus in answer to a question. How do I act? How do I do? How do I treat it? It's something called the Good Samaritan. One day, some of you guys will read it, and you'll see what it's all about. But they pretty much explain what they're talking about here. It says, you have to act the Good Samaritan every day. See, understand, these guys read the Bible. They understood the parable of the Good Samaritan. They understood what they were being mentored to do. You know, remember, they were being made disciples. The first 4 years, they were reading the Bible. They were being made disciples. The Christian dictate is go through the world and make disciples. They were being discipled to be the Good Samaritan. They knew what that was. They knew that was about every day going out and selflessly helping other people and becoming in groups like that. They knew that's what, they knew this idea of, well, how many meetings should I go? You're just involved now in a royal priesthood. You're involved in a ministry. You're involved in a, you ever hear these guys, doesn't it amaze you hear about these guys? Since I am involved in a church setting now, and I have been for years, I actually run across people that I never, you know, I used to hang around bars and the Playboy Club and stuff like that. Let me tell you something. When you hang around bars and the Playboy Club and stuff like that, I ran across a lot of people, not one missionary. I think I saw a TV movie once, an old TV movie once about some missionaries in the jungle or something. Not one missionary. I had lunch with three of them today. You know, I have my own ministry out of my church. I said, you know, I've been involved with the church around that. He says, I just run into missionaries all the time into foreign countries doing different things here and everything. You know, when you're involved in that kind of thing, in a spiritual fellowship, you realize that these people are real. They're actually alive. You don't believe it. There are people like going to Afghanistan. I mean, husbands, wives, kids going to Afghanistan. They're real people. They pick up. They get sponsored. They get money from other people. And they go away to like Bulgaria or to New Guinea or the jungle. Sometimes they get killed. They go on mission trips. They do this stuff. Well, I got news for you. The way I understand Alcoholics Anonymous is you sign up for this thing and you're serious. You're in the mission. You're involved in mission work. You're not any less a missionary than some guy who's going to New Guinea. You know, you watch TV and you watch about these guys that are going to Haiti. Helping the children. You watch these people that go to foreign countries, these Christian guys, whatever, go to foreign countries, and maybe you say, man, that's really something. How can these guys do that kind of stuff? You're involved in that deal. You're not getting paid for it. You're going out there. Your mission field is all the alcoholics and addicts, and quite frankly, the more you get involved in this, codependents, sex addicts, other people that are struggling with unbelievable, unhealthy dependencies and things like that, you're in the field, the mission field. If you don't understand you're in the mission field, you're never going to understand the kind of fervor Bill Wilson brought to this thing and Bob Smith that caused him to write all sorts of books, go all over the place, devote his entire life. You're never going to understand a guy like this and why he was so excited and how much joy he had. You're not never going to understand these guys. You're never going to understand the guy who wrote the book, you know, he sold himself short. You know, the story, he sold himself short. You're never going to understand why he ended that story, you know, with the statement. You'll never understand when he says, I am rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcohol scrap heap to a position of trust, where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. If you don't understand that this guy, the most important thing in his life is that he was allowed to help other people and go out there in the mission fields and help, and that was the deal with him, you'll never be able to hang with this guy. It'll never make any sense to you. You'll ask him, what should I do? And he'll tell you what to do. He'll say, follow me. And you'll say, I ain't going there. I got to watch the canary. Don't you understand? I got a Mets game I got to go to. Don't you understand? I got good seats to the game. They can care about good seats to the game. The stuff you care about, they could care less about. You know, and it's not because they don't have money or they don't have time, they just don't care about it. It's not their focus. Later on in this book, in Visions for You, it says this. Still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. I won't have the benefit of fellowshipping with you guys. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. Now listen to this, because this is what I'm going to talk about. It says, He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Number one, that tells you two things. That tells you, according to this book, whether you like it or not, you crave fellowship. If you're an alcoholic, personally, I think if you're a human being, but if you're an alcoholic, there's not a person in here that doesn't crave fellowship. That's why you drank in order to get fellowship. You know, girls, you may think you need a guy. I know that deal. I understand that deal. You know, girls, you may think you need a guy. You know, guys, you may think you need a girl. You don't need a girl. You don't need a guy. Listen, I'm all for marriage. I've been married many years. All for procreating and all that stuff. It's nice to have a wife. It's nice to have a husband. What you really crave is spiritual fellowship. If you have spiritual fellowship that is complete in you, you don't need anybody except the God of your understanding. What you crave, according to this book, is you crave spiritual fellowship. And you want to know something? God is going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You know what that means? That means, and I hate to put it this way, you're going to have to create it. You have the responsibility to create the fellowship you crave. And I'm going to tell you something. If you don't create spiritual fellowship, are you ready? You're going to create a fellowship. I promise you, you will create a fellowship. It'll be with a porno site. It'll be down at the titty bar. It'll be with a bunch of guys that are going to take you out drinking. It'll be with some potheads or some dope fiends or something like that. It'll be with some gal that's going to be trying to stab you with a butcher knife. Or, you know, it's going to be with some guy who's beating you up or acting crazy and smoking crack. You're going to create a fellowship, and it's going to be with the wrong type of person, because you so crave fellowship and you don't recognize that's part of it. You know what it says in the 12 and 12? Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and its devastating weakness and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. And if true happiness, he'll see none at all. Unless you understand the part and parcel of your alcoholism is this craving of fellowship, and unless you learn how to create spiritual fellowship, you will fall in the trap of somehow linking up with the wrong people at the wrong time, sending you to the wrong places, and you'll end up drinking. And you know, that's part and parcel of the disease. And it says right here, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact. Because if you just focus on your relationship with God, He's going to show you how to do this. He's going to give you the courage, because it takes courage to create fellowship. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear the way of the wreckage of your past. Keep freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you'll surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to a happy destiny. Or maybe you'll meet none of us. Maybe you'll meet none of us. Maybe you'll just go to meetings and then go home. And maybe you'll meet none of us. So here's the deal. My life. You know, unbelievable. It's crazy. So I'm sitting there having lunch, because you see what happens at lunch. Let me tell you what happens at lunch. Well, because somewhere along the line, by following this goofy sponsor, you know, I ended up going to all these venues and sharing and talking and sponsoring people, because I ran into a guy one day from California who was a circuit speaker, and I asked him for his telephone number, and he said, I could think it was unlisted, and he said to me this. He said he gave me a shot. He did what old timers do. He gave me a shot. I didn't do anything wrong. He just gave me a shot. Maybe it's because, like my friend says, I'm so egotistical, you know, manipulative and self-centered, that maybe I look like somebody you should give a shot to. I don't know, but he gave me a shot. And all I asked him for was his telephone number. And this is, he could have said, here's my number. He could say, fine, Russell. He didn't say that to me. He humiliated me. Why would an old timer do that? Well, maybe it's because I've never forgotten it. You know, when you get humiliated, you don't forget these things. And this is what he said to me. I said, is it unlisted? He says, Russell, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in, and I looked up to this guy. I wanted him to like me. He says, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm available. Here's my number. Call at any time. And he gave me his number. Now, ask me the question, did I ever call it? No. So ask me why. Well, you know why. Why didn't I call it? I was scared. I had 5-6 years. The guy offered my number. He said he was available. I loved him. I looked up to him, and I never called it because I was scared. Wow. Wow. And I wasn't drinking. That's as much as being an alcoholic. That'll tell you a lot about what's going on with you and how deadly this, and you know, being scared and not calling somebody when they're offering their help. You know, what do you think? You think he went home and said, I got to run around and track down Russell and everything like that and find out why he didn't call? No, he didn't do that. He was just available. But I wouldn't call because I was scared. Man, you think you got to get past that deal? You think you got to recognize that deal? You know? And, you know, every once in a while I get people call me. They call me out of the blue. You'd be surprised. I get calls. I get calls from Wisconsin. I get calls from Virginia. I get calls from all over because of the tapes and everything like that. And it always amazes me that a guy actually picks up the phone. I don't know what gets into him, you know what I mean? And say, you don't know me, but I've been listening. I want to talk to you. And I always realize that it's such a real courageous thing to do stuff like that. Of course, most of the people that call me up, they're calling me up. I'm not talking about those guys, but I get a lot of calls from people who are, they get so desperate, you know, that it overcomes the fear. You know, that's the kind of, but in any event, so because of this deal with this guy and how he taught me and how I was mentored in AA, that's the way I act. That's the way I do things. When I So I was always taught that you sponsor people, that you never say no, that somebody asks you to speak, you always say yes, that the bottom line is you never turn down service, you do service. And I was never told, apparently there's some sort of thing in this program, you can't sponsor more than 3 people, or you can't sponsor more than 10 people, or you can't sponsor, yeah. I was never told that. So I'll sponsor a million people. You know, I just won't necessarily take the phone calls. You know, but I'll sponsor them. Because I just say, you come to, will you sponsor? Sure. You sponsor? Sure. Sure, yeah, yeah. Because what, it doesn't matter. Sponsor 100 people, only one guy calls you. You know what I mean? Because it's all like that same guy, you know, like me. You could sponsor. You got to say yes to 10 people before 3 call you. And of the 3 call you, only one calls you back. And the guy that calls you back, you tell him, meet me at the restaurant, and he doesn't show up. So you better say yes to 100 people if you want to get a good 3. You know what I mean? And 2 of those are going to fall off. They're going to commit suicide or go crazy anyway. You know what I mean? So you got to sponsor 1,000 to get a good 10. You know what I mean? And you need at least 10 people calling you up or else you'll go crazy. You understand what I'm saying? And that's 10 people you can have lunch with. You know what I mean? Like my sponsor did. And so you can have lunch with 10 people, talk about crazy stuff and everything like that, and then go to a meeting with these guys. And so how does it pan out now that I've got like 30 years? What does it look? What does my life look like? My life looks like this. I got a guy named Jim. You know, James is part of this. There's a lot of guys in here that are part of this deal. We got a guy named Jim. He's the keeper of the telephone. We have lunch every day. We have lunch. People say, how many meetings you go to? We have lunch every day somewhere. Everybody, how many people eat lunch? Well, you got to eat lunch, right? Well, if you're not eating lunch, I don't know how you can stay sober. I mean, really, I don't know how you're staying sober if you're not eating lunch. It's all about lunch. You know, guy will ask me, you sponsor me. He'll say, so will you sponsor me? And he'll say, yeah. He says, like, when do we stop the study? He says, well, we're having lunch next Tuesday. He said, well, no, I want to do this. I said, yeah, we're having lunch. He says, no, but I want to work the program. I says, I know, we're going to have lunch. See, because you can't have lunch, how can you work the steps if you can't have lunch? If the steps are about turning your will and your life over to God, if the steps are about following direction, if the steps are about everything that we've been talking about, and if you ask someone to sponsor you and he says, let's have lunch, and you say, I can't do that, what does that tell me about you? How are you going to be able to do anything else? That's the easiest thing is having lunch. You're going to eat anyway. If you're telling me you can't eat lunch, why should I waste any time with you? And so Jim calls me up at around 11 o'clock every day. He says, where are we eating lunch? And I say, well, where are we eating today? Captain's Tavern.
Shocking.
So, what?
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking. So the message goes out, Captain's Tavern, to about 60, 70 guys. And like 12 showed up today. And that's every single day. Now, that's not what I did the first week I was sober, the first month I was sober, but you know something? That sort of developed over a period of time. We have a thing called the Lost Sheep List. I love, you know, if you have the internet now, you should be involved in, that's the greatest thing involved, the Lost Sheep List. It goes out to 600 people, 600 men all over the world. At the end of every month, we have a lunch, either here or in Broward County, 40, 50 guys show up. I belong to a church. I belong to a diaconate. You know, I go to, but tomorrow morning at 7:30, I'll be at a Bible study. There's a whole other group of guys there that I'm friends with. You know, some of them are in AA, some of them are in AA, some are in recovery, some aren't. My sponsor will be there. In other words, last night I was at Celebrate Recovery over at Calvary Chapel Church, and I was talking. There's a whole other group of fellowship. It's all about constantly being involved in spiritual fellowship of people that are uplifting each other and edifying each other and talking about the same stuff and on the same roads and lifting themselves up. You understand what I'm saying? And doing that deal. And they're all excited and happy and enthusiastic. Enthusiasm means in God and doing this thing, and it's working like thermonuclear fission. And they're all doing really what they said to do in the book, in both the Bible and in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're all doing what the first 100 people are doing. And then you got the other people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are going to a few meetings, not really sponsoring much of anybody, not really being sponsored, and wondering when will the miracle work for them. Because they got 15 years or 12 years, and it's just blah, home to work, home to work, home to work. And I say to them, well, let's go have lunch. And they'll say, I don't have time. I'll say, why don't you come up to us to lunch? He says, no, I'm going home to watch the game. And they'll never get it. They'll never get it. Because they're not really involved in this deal. They're not involved in the fellowship of the Spirit. So some guy calls me up today, one of the crew that's on the email list, you know, from California. And he's got 17 years. This isn't a guy with low time. 17 years. And we start talking. And I talk to him, and he respects me. And he says, you know, well, you know, I'm so busy, and I got so much stuff, and I feel so bogged down, and I feel the, you know, it's like listening to him, I want to, you know, take a couple of pills and end it all, you know? Oh, my wife, and You know, and I love the guy. I really love the guy. But I know what's going on. There's no excitement. There's no nothing. It's just 17 years and just another meet. I mean, this guy is more than trudging. There should be a word better than trudging for this guy. You know, fludging or something. I don't know. It's bad, you know. It's not looking good. Now, I got another guy in California who I speak to all the time, and he's, like, excited. He's, like, going crazy. He's got about 10 years. He's going crazy. Now, listen to this guy. Every Wednesday night, he gets a group of guys over to his house because he's doing it the way I did it. He gets a group of guys over my house, and he plays a tape or a talk. It may be this talk or something like that that we're doing right now. It may be somebody else's talk, and they listen to the talk, and then they talk about it. And then they go out to dinner or something like that, or they have dinner over at his house. He's got a wife. He's got three kids. And he's involved and always constantly going around and getting involved in fellowship. He's always with guys, and he's always trying to figure out a way how to get guys together and people together and stuff like that and get groups together and talk about this stuff. And he goes on retreats. He looks for stuff. He makes efforts to go out to find other people, goes to church and everything like that. And he is like, you can't contain him. He's like nuclear. He's like off the wall, excited about this deal. When are we going to get the new talk? What are you doing? Where are you going next? And everything. Tell me when you're coming out to California so we can meet at Long Beach. I got a couple guys that want to meet you. And everything. You understand what I'm saying? He is like Gonzo. And so I'm on the phone with the guy with 17 years. Well, you know, I don't know. You know, work is tough. And think I'll blow my brains out tomorrow. So I say, Joe, listen to me. Listen to me, Joe. I say, Joe, listen, I got a guy out there. His name's Fred. And I tell him what I told you. He's doing this, and he's doing that, and he's doing the other thing. I want you to link up with Fred. You know, and I had a little more conversation. I won't have to go through the whole conversation. Whatever I had to do to explain to him that he's crazy. Because, you know, sometimes when you're 17 years, you don't realize you're crazy. Because you got 17 years. And if you got 17 years, there's not too many people telling you you're crazy because you say, I got 17 years, so you must not be crazy, right? So, you know, after he sort of gets the point that there may be something wrong with him, I suggest to him that maybe this has something to do with fellowship and spiritual fellowship and not really working this thing and doing this deal. And he should be feeling that. And so I say, you know, you need to link up with Fred. You know, because Fred is going to, Fred and you need to get together. Because you live within 20 miles of each other. And I know what Fred's doing. And I know what, you know, he's doing. And so I say, Fred, an email. I say, Fred, this is Joe. Joe, this is Fred. I send them both their numbers and everything like that. And of course, Fred, you know what Fred's doing? Fred's going, man, I'm calling the guy tomorrow. I'm going to get him involved in the group. We're going to grab him. We're going to throw a net on him. You know, he's ours, you know. And you know what Joe's going like me with this other guy. I don't know whether I want to call him, you know what I mean? You know, and he's going this. Well, hopefully they'll get together. And so, and you know, as soon as he gets together, it's like sending the book. Your imagination will be fired. You will be with people. You'll be excited. Just like this group gets excited. Just like any group that's together gets, they'll be fired. But you know what the problem is? The problem is, in order to make this thing work, Joe has to do something. Unfortunately, Fred probably won't drive over to Joe's house and grab him and throw him in the car. My sponsor used to do that, actually, to me. But he probably won't, okay? Unfortunately, Joe, at 17 years, is going to have to get off his ass, pick up the phone, call up Fred and say, where are you guys meeting? And probably go over to his house. Drive the 20 miles and go over to his house to link up with him and become part of that group and that deal, you know what I mean? So that he can go to lunch, too. And he can hear this guy whine about this and that guy whine about this. And he can see this program in action among guys that love each other and are picking each other up and saying, let's go here, let's go there. And actually get involved with the swarm of people and do this thing right. And so one day this guy's down and one guy's that day's down and this guy's down. And be part of the group so that it becomes almost easy to share his troubles and stuff because everybody knows each other and they love each other. He's going to have to become part of the spiritual fellowship of the spirit, the spiritual family that share with each other and part of this deal, instead of being a loner out there. But he's going to have to do that. You're going to have to each try to create the fellowship you crave. By what? By sponsoring people? Yes, you're going to have to sponsor. Yes. Yes, you're going to, you know, I'm going to tell you something. This is just an opinion. I'm just going to tell you, but I'm going to just say it out. Yes, I know you can do 12-step work by making coffee. Yes, I know it's important to do 12-step work by doing service. Yes, I know you can do 12-step work by doing this and by doing that. And there's a lot of great people doing 12-step work. I personally believe that notwithstanding all that stuff, and I've done it all. I've done all that service, okay? And this is service, okay? I think that the bottom line is that alcoholics need to sponsor other alcoholics. You can do a million types of service. The bottom line is you need to disciple other alcoholics. You need to get other alcoholics. Listen, it's your life. Nobody's asking you. That's because you're not talking to meetings. Nobody's asking you. That's because you're not going up to the person saying, can I help you? Because there's no new people coming in here all the time. And you know new people are dumb as, you know how dumb they are. They don't know. They don't know that you're scared. They don't know that you don't know anything. They don't know that you're goofy. You're just there. They're just scared. And you know that if you really desire a sponsor, you come up to them and say, hey, what's your name? Fred, sit down with me. You start talking to me and say, you have a sponsor yet? He says, no. He says, I'll be your sponsor, your temporary sponsor. They don't know to say no. They say no, you tell them, no, you don't say no. I'm your sponsor for 30 days. You just tell them. They don't know that you don't say. They've been coming out of treatment centers. Treatment centers told them, get a sponsor. They'll be relieved, you know. In other words, there's no excuse for not sponsoring people. That's how you start your fellowship. That's how you start that. So now you got people to go to lunch with. Now you got people to go to dinner with. Now you got people to take the meetings with you in the car with three or four people. Now you have people to go to dinner with. And from there, then you get the email list. Then the next thing you know, you're having meetings over at your house and things are going on and stuff. Now you see, here's the deal. There are going to be people listening to this talk and listen to this and say, this guy's crazy. Yeah, I'm crazy like a fox. I'm counting my money all the way down to the bank. Yeah, I'm crazy and you're miserable. Trying to figure out how I'm crazy. And you know why you think I'm crazy? Because you don't want to do this. You're crazy because if I'm right, and if this is a key, and if this is important, then that means you've been doing it wrong, and you may have to change. And the last thing you want to do is change, because as far as you're concerned, you got your 15 years, your 17 years, and everything, and you don't want to do any more extra credit. Which is fine. It's fine. I told you, this is just my opinion. This is just about, I'm just going to share my life. You know, but I'm going to tell you something. There are going to be some people that do it this way. They're going to do it with the fellowship of the Spirit. They're going to do it. They're going to create the fellowship they crave. They're going to go out there. They're going to look for people. They're going to be excited. And I understand it may be easier for an extrovert than it is for an introvert, but it's still necessary if you're an alcoholic. I'm sorry if it's a little bit tougher for you than it is for me. I know I'm a good talker. I understand that. I'm an attorney. I know I'm a good talker, so it's a little bit easier. I'm sorry. You're still going to have to do it. Or get involved with a group, with somebody else to do it, whatever it is. You don't have to change your entire personality, but you got to link up and become a part of, in my opinion, and start discipling people and sharing this with other people. Otherwise, you're destined to live a life where you go to meetings and you go home and you close the door and you're in abject loneliness. And you're empty. And you're empty. And if that's the kind of sobriety you want, I know, there's no question in my mind. There are people here that just are living lives of unbelievably loneliness. Unbelievable loneliness. And they feel alone, and they feel completely out there. I absolutely know that's true in here. And they don't know how to connect, and they don't know what to do, you know. And they're going to meetings, and they're sober. And they're going to meetings, and they're sober. And don't even understand, they don't even understand how to do what I'm telling them to do, even as I'm telling them to do it. Because they're so scared of trying to figure out how to do it. You know? I mean, I'm telling you, that's part of the disease. And let me ask some. How many people, now you've heard, I just gave my, this is my talk. I've just expended myself, okay? How many times have you heard that talked about the way I just talked about it in AA? Like zero, right? Zero. Okay, well, that sort of explains something to you. You know, just because it's never talked about doesn't mean it ain't true. So let me ask you something. If that's the truth, if that's what the book talks about, why don't you read the book? Why don't you read Working with Others? Why don't you read what it says, how the fellowship will fire your imagination? Link it up with, why don't you read how they say you should join? Why don't you read about how they say your life should look like once you're doing this, okay? And then try to ask yourself this question. How come the fellowship never talks about this stuff or never stresses this stuff? Just got a lot of sick people walking around, bipolar, popping pills and everything like that, thinking, you know, that their whole problem has to do with Valium deficiency or something like that. How come it's not talked about? It's not talked about because the majority of people in AA don't want to do it. If they talk about it, they got to do it. Because the disease is rampant in this program. Rampant. You know, there's a lot of really sick and suffering alcoholics outside these rooms. By the way, did you know, you ever hear Link Hansel say, a moment of silence for the sick and suffering alcoholics outside these rooms? How about a moment of silence for the sick and suffering alcoholics inside the rooms? How about that deal? There's a lot of them in here. So thank you very much. God bless you.